over at Justin Siena.
Each year, millions of baseball fans cheer for the home team, and it takes everyone playing as a team to get the win.
Home run is running third. Save!
Listen, baseball's all about teamwork. Major League ballplayers know to be safe at home, they have to work together. As a fan, teamwork means being responsible and getting your friends and family home safely to and from the ballpark. So always wear your safety belt and use a sober-designated driver. Find out how you can win tickets to the World Series or a trip to the All-Star Game by visiting the designated driver booth at a Major League ballpark, because responsibility has its rewards.
A message from Team Coalition.
Annapolis professional baseball team, the Silverados, with an 11-11 record, are back in action tonight as they open a two-game series at Sonoma. 5:45 airtime tonight and tomorrow night for the broadcast on KVON.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some news stories from our KVON newsroom. Firefighters continue their battle against the Pawnee Fire up in Lake County. Hundreds of structures remain threatened. Dozens have already burned. Thousands of residents have been evacuated. Still not much containment on that fire. Governor Brown has declared a state of emergency for Lake County. Noreen Evans told Barry Martin that the SB 1088 bill is a wildfire tax and would pass the costs of wildfires onto taxpayers rather than maintaining them as a responsibility of PG&E. Senator Bill Dodd sees his bill differently.
What we've been trying to do is to simply put a framework in so that we can harden our grid. In other words, all these fires that happen throughout Northern California, and we're going to find out the fires that happened in Southern California as well, were ignited by our electrical grid. We're using old technology. We need to upgrade so that our grid no longer creates these big problems. Depending upon what happens, how the Tubbs fire is categorized, this could be a $15 billion hit for the investor-owned utility. In this case, it's PG&E. But my bill makes it very, very clear. If there is any negligence whatsoever, that an investor-owned utility is not going to be able to recover from the ratepayers.
Dodd says some of the costs may need to become socialized and paid for by the state of California. The city of Napa and Napa County have an informational workshop coming up on creating a rental unit on your property in the city or county. Learn how you can be part of the affordable housing solution and earn additional income by adding a dwelling unit within your existing single-family residence. It's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Monday, July 16th at the City of Napa Senior Center, Social Hall, 1500 Jefferson Street. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news.
My name is Tom.
My name is Cindy.
We give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
We know our time and money are going to the right places.
We don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
What do you hear? Most people just hear an engine. We hear a 6.2 liter Hemi V8 with a supercharger that accelerates so fast, it'll suck the air out of your lungs and knock you back in your seat like you're an astronaut in a rocket ship hurtling through the stratosphere. But then again, we're not most people. We're the Brotherhood of Muscle. Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Hola, mi valle. This is Isela
and Gabriela,
your new host for La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela.
Tune in to 1440 AM KVON
or stream KVON.com on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to our new show, La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela, to learn and listen about current topics, events, and happenings that affect our community.
Listen to your powerhouse Latinas every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to 10, La Hora with Isela
y Gabriela.
Judd's Napa Valley Show. Every episode, a veritable cornucopia of Finkel fun.
Get ready for another heapful of fascinating things to know from witty and intriguing people on Judd's Napa Valley Show. No stale script and no rehearsing, live from a Napa studio. You may be that intriguing person on Judd's Napa Valley Show.
Pardon me, I'll have a Chardonnay. A marvelous day, it's hard to say. I know we never talk about the Sauvignon Blanc. It's a must-have on the podcast. It's Judd's Napa Valley Show.
Easy, the Pinot Grigio.
You can't ease this flow if I elaborate over a Cabernet. My buddy's the truth. You should study my man Juddy and learn something new.
Thank you.
wall at Buttercream Bakery.
Everyone who enters this place makes us happy. Some when they arrive, some when they leave. And now, live from the 1440 KVON studios at Broadcast Park in the beautiful Napa Valley, it's Judd's Napa Valley Show. I'm Lauren Mole, and here's your host, Judd Finkelstein.
Good morning, Lauren Mole. Thank you so much for that great intro and that inspirational quote from Buttercream Bakery. Your microphone didn't seem to be on when you first started speaking, but it's on now. So just to attribute that, that's a sign at Buttercream Bakery.
Actually, it is.
It is. Lauren Mole, what's happening, sir?
Ah, boy, I am so excited about my gig next week at AT&T Ballpark with the world champion San Francisco Giants.
Tell us all about it.
Well, you see, Everybody is a Star, the organization that I'm with, is a nonprofit organization based in Sonoma that helps special needs individuals like myself showcase our talents in professionally made broadcast quality music videos. And we've been asked to sing for the San Francisco Giants, the Star Spangled Banner. And get this, Judd, I just looked on the Giants website today. They're going to be playing against another World Series champion, the great St. Louis Cardinals.
Is that who it is?
Yes.
Wow, that's going to be a great game.
It is. I am looking forward to it.
Okay, and tickets are available?
At everybodystar.org.
Wonderful. And while you're at everybodystar.org, check out the videos that are there, including, I just got to know you.
I just haven't met you yet.
I just haven't met you yet by Lauren Mole. It's a great video.
It is.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm also looking forward to the annual 4th of July parade.
Are you singing in that?
No.
No. You have, though, in the past.
Oh, we did, but not this year.
No. You're just going to be a spectator, or do you have a float that you're designing? And
I'll just be a spectator.
Okay, that's fun.
I could come if I don't have to work, though.
Ah, well, see what you can do about that.
Right, and I understand.
It's a long parade. You might, even if you do work, you might catch part of it.
Yeah, and I understand that our very own Bob St. Laurent and Doris Gentry will be broadcasting live that day.
I wouldn't doubt it. I haven't investigated, but they always do a great job in years past, so I would imagine they'll be back again in the broadcast booth.
Oh, they will. So what's been going on with you, Judd?
Well, let me tell you what's coming up. What's been going on? Things are good. You know, wine is good. Still getting great buzz on the wines. Still, thank goodness, and thank you to all who have put your input on TripAdvisor. Judd's Hill is still the number one specific thing to do on TripAdvisor is to visit Judd's Hill when in Napa Valley. After the more general, go wine tasting, get a wine tour. But as far as like naming a place to go, and it's because, the wines are good and the hospitality. We certainly pride ourselves in offering a great customer guest experience when you come. So I invite all listeners, judshill.com. We love to see our Napa neighbors. We love to see folks visiting. Come say hi. But I want to talk about some things coming up. This coming Sunday, July 1st, the date got changed. I announced this a couple weeks ago with a different date, so I want to be sure folks know the date has changed, but it is going to be this coming Sunday, July 1st. What, you ask, Judd, is it? What are you talking about? I'm talking about Be Kind Day. Napa's Be Kind movement is having Be Kind Day at the Napa Silverados. Our brand new professional baseball team is hosting Napa Be Kind for a Be Kind Day, Sunday, July 1st at 1 p.m. at Silverado's Baseball Park down by Napa College. And tickets can be had at silveradosbaseball.com. And the Facebook link is Be Kind Napa. And come out and see our very own Napa Silverados take on the Vallejo Admirals. The Kindness Kids will be there giving away their iconic Be Kind buttons. They will have information about the upcoming Kindness Day, which will be August 18th back in Yountville. So save that date. Details to come. And there will be raffles and prize giveaways and all kinds of fun. So we hope to see you at the ballpark this coming Sunday, July 1st at 1 p.m. Get your tickets now. Also, one other thing. Judd's Hill. We're having a winemaker dinner in Napa. This is kind of rare. I don't do a lot of these within Napa. They happen from time to time. Usually I go out of town because for whatever reason, people seem more interested. I don't know. I think in Napa, it's like, oh, Judd's doing a dinner. Well, I don't know. I'll just see him tomorrow at the gym. I don't need to go to have dinner with him. But I'm really excited, and I hope you will come have dinner with me. It will be Tuesday, July 17th. At Napa Valley Bistro, a real local favorite place right here in downtown Napa. Chef Bernardo Ayala does a great job with some wonderful comfort food. I just really enjoy that restaurant. And we will be pairing a multi-course dinner with our Judd's Hill wines. Once again, Tuesday, July 17th at 6 o'clock p.m. Details are at judshill.com. Just click on events. Or you can call, just call and make your reservation at 707-666-2383 to get to Napa Valley Bistro for that dinner. That's what I've got going on. Lauren, we've got way too much to talk about with this guest, so let's dilly-dally no more. Let's give an introduction.
Okay, Judd.
Thanks.
Today's guest cooking is hot. In Napa Valley, she's of the best that we got. She also writes books, perfect for all cooks. Please meet Chef Sarah Scott.
Chef Sarah Scott, how are you?
I'm great, Judd. How are you?
I'm well. It's so nice to see you. We have been trying to get you on this show for I don't know how long. It seems like everyone gets busy, and then due to I take all the blame, a terrible scheduling blunder, we had you, and then I had to say, oops, can you come another time? But we got you now. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sticking with it. And I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time because you are one of these people that is just known throughout Napa Valley and the culinary world as one of these great chefs who kind of has her hands in a lot of places, figuratively, I suppose. And
yes.
Yeah. But you're part of a lot of really cool food happenings and goings-ons and creativity, and I've been wanting to talk to you.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Judd.
Yeah.
I have certainly cooked a lot of food in this valley.
Yes, yes, you have. Let's work our way up to that, shall we?
Sure.
Because you are known from, well, we're going to get to that. Let's go all the way back.
Okay.
I'm not even going to get into your pedigree right now. It's just going to come along the way. I started looking at the list like, it's too long. It'll just naturally come out.
Oh.
But you're not originally from Napa Valley, although you certainly have become a part of the fabric here, but you're from down south.
I am. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And I'm proud to be a Southerner.
Yes.
And I'm very happy to be a Californian.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Having traveled around. Actually, I've only made it once down to Atlanta, but had a really wonderful, wonderful time. We can get into that some other time, but I did have some great food.
Oh, my gosh.
Some great Southern style food. So was that what you grew up with? Was your family a family of cooks? How did you get into this path?
So I grew up with really delicious food.
Mm-hmm.
My mother actually didn't like to cook.
Oh, no?
No, she would cook. She was a good mother, so she had her little specialties like pot roast and meatloaf, and it kind of was the same meals rotated every week. But we had a woman that came to our house and cooked.
Oh.
And her name was Bobby Lee Jackson.
Mm.
And she was a cook at the church where my father was a preacher.
Okay, so that was the family business.
That was the family business. All right. My father was a Presbyterian minister.
All right.
And Bobby Lee Jackson worked in the kitchen there. And I used to find myself skipping church and going downstairs.
To the church basement.
To the church basement kitchen, where I would hang out there with the cooks and Bobby Lee and make biscuits and help them get the lunch ready for after church.
Ah, so you really found that. That's where you felt your calling.
Mm-hmm.
Your father felt his calling upstairs.
Exactly.
You felt your calling in the basement making biscuits.
Yeah.
And I think I read about you. Your favorite dish to this day is fried chicken.
Oh, my God. I love fried chicken. And Bobby Lee made the best fried chicken.
So that's where your love of fried chicken came from, you think?
Yes, yes. I credit her with giving me my food sensibility. She was a natural cook. Her palate was amazing. Now I know. was so spot on. And I feel like spending that time with her, and when she would come to our house, of course I would be with her. She would teach me how to cook. I feel like she kind of pointed the way to what my career was going to be. I didn't know it at the time. That's not where I was headed.
And do you think it was the actual food itself? Was it something about her spirit and how she approached the cooking as well? What did you see in her that inspired you to follow this path?
Well,
that's great when you can point to some person or some event, and this is.
Well, I can, you know, it's kind of like as I reflect on, you know, where I am and what I've now done for a living for over almost 40 years.
Oh.
I see that, you know, it's the thing of feeding people, and a kind of a pleasure in that and a joy in that. You know, there was just this kind of feeling when, you know, we'd be sitting at the table just, you know, shelling peas and taking our time and just spending time together and kind of the care of putting food together. It just, food kind of came to equal love for me.
Wow.
And that's an important part of what food is about for me today.
Wonderful. And at that young age, when you showed an interest in food, did your folks, and especially your father, did you see any kind of analogy between what he was doing, what you were doing? You're still feeding people in a certain sort of way,
yeah.
I suppose.
I think so. Yeah. It's kind of food. Food to me is a way of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about comfort food, and everyone's got their own kind of comfort food. And I think it comes from, you know, from childhood or those flavors or even textures, things that made you feel loved and made you feel at home. And my dad was feeding his flock with spiritual wisdom and comfort, you know.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see the connection there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what a great way to be inspired at a young age. So what did you do about it? Did you begin just cooking for the family? Did you go out to study cooking? Is that... No, actually, I think your background, at least college-wise, you studied journalism, right? Or communications?
Yes.
Journalism, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it never occurred to me to cook for a living. Mm. I mean, I think, you know, in those days, being a chef was not a glamorous thing, and it was just something that had never occurred to me. Because as much as loving food, I loved books, and I loved writing. I wanted to grow up and be a writer. And I do write.
Yes.
But I, of course, I cooked. You know, I always cooked at home. I was really, I would cook things for the family. Later in high school, my friends and I used to have these things. We called them food fest. And we would invite everyone over and just cook, you know, 30 dishes.
Oh, wow.
And have everyone there. So food has always been this thread in my life. But I did, and I worked in a bookstore after high school, and I always gravitated to the cookbook section. That was my domain.
Yeah, you're born to do this.
Yeah. And, well, the other, my one cooking credential, because I did not go to cooking school, is I have the Betty Crocker Homemaker of Tomorrow Award that I got in high school.
Yeah.
Because I used to read so many cookbooks and read Gourmet Magazine in high school that I aced this test. That when Betty Crocker Homemaker Award came to our school to give this test, all the girls in the Future Homemakers of Tomorrow also took the test.
That's a great
and
name.
I'm the outsider coming in, and I aced it.
Well, okay, you bring this up. By the way, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful news.
Elizabeth Warren also has one of these.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow, you're in good company.
I feel like...
So what does that entail? What is the test? What are you given?
Oh, my gosh.
What qualified you to be Betty Crocker's champion homemaker of tomorrow?
Well, honestly, I don't even remember the questions. It was like multiple choice or fill in the blank. But I remember the one question that all the girls were so mad. It's like, how did you know how to do this? And it was like, how to peel a peach? By dunking it in boiling water for just a minute and being able to slip the skin off.
Oh, okay.
And I had read that in a cookbook, probably Joy of Cooking.
Lauren, we just got a great tip today. Don't you love coming in and learning something? I didn't know you could do that with a peach. I love peaches. That's great.
Tomatoes, too.
Okay.
So, you know, there were questions like that. Homemaking questions, food questions, anyway.
Here you are.
And here I am.
And do you still, is that still, you know, when you're introduced at these grand, you know, international culinary gatherings, ladies and gentlemen, she has done, you know, the executive chef of the Robert Mondavi Winery, blah, 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 on and on, the author of this book, and Betty Crocker's future homemaker of tomorrow, Chef Sarah Scott.
I try to bring it up. I really...
I think you should. I think you should be wearing a sash that says that.
I know.
On and on. Okay. All right. So did you ever get into the journalism side, or that was,
you know,
something
I
to
did.
Study to hone your writing? No, you did.
I did. I was beginning to work on the Atlanta paper, the Journal Constitution at the time. And this was one of these fateful moments where I was just about to be assigned my first feature article. But I was also, I had a boyfriend at the time, and it was summer. I had just graduated, and we were planning to make a trip to California. And so I was at this moment of, do I take this job? Do I write this article, or do I hop in the car and go to California? So you know what I did.
Well, I think you've anticipated my next question. How did you get to California?
Yes, I made that choice. And after making that trip, we ended up moving out here. So it kind of changed the course of my life. Although when I did get here, I tried to work at the Napa Register.
What was the draw to Napa specifically with the...
So I have to tell you, it was purely just happenstance. I had heard of Napa. I didn't grow up, you know, with wine in our family. I had kind of heard of Napa Valley. I didn't really know much about it.
And it wasn't at that time, we're talking about the late 70s?
This is 79.
1979? I mean, certainly wine was on the map for Napa Valley, but the food side, not so much.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious what the draw. You'd heard of
it,
but...
It was... A beautiful place.
Okay, that for sure.
Yeah, I remember this moment. I still remember we were camping. You know, we were on the road camping, and we were trying to camp out at the state park near Calistoga.
Mm-hmm.
But it was full. So we were driving south on 29. It was near the end of the day. And I look over, and I think now I know it's where Farniente was. And there's this shaft of sunlight through the trees like this moment. And I went... I had the chills, like, this place. There's something about this place.
Yeah.
And then we left. But then my boyfriend, now ex-husband, ended up getting a job in Fairfield. So we did have to move out here.
Mm-hmm.
And we just decided to come to Napa, just because it was kind of cute, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so crazy now, but... It was just by happenstance that it happened. So,
well, you said you got a job at the Register. Or you tried to get a job.
I tried. I had very few clips
to cover food, or just to be a journalist.
No, just to write. At this point, I wasn't. I was cooking brownies.
Got it. Okay.
Lemon bars.
I see.
Okay,
so where's the jump? I know there was some connection with the much loved, but maybe before its time, cuisine renaissance.
Yes, for sure. That that
you explain what that was.
Yeah, it was, that place was incredible. Now, you know, it was at the time, and now you look back, it's like, my gosh, you know, they were truly ahead of their time. But it was kind of everything wine and food under one roof
here in Napa. Cooking school,
cookware store, restaurant, wine bar, wine store, catering, everything.
You know, I remember as a little kid, probably maybe 9, 10, somewhere in that neighborhood, taking a kid's cooking class and learning how to do a chocolate souffle. I thought it was the fanciest thing. And I'm, as you know and can see, I'm a very fancy man. I was a fancy kid, so it really appealed to me. I could make a chocolate, and I remember going home and cooking it for my family. So
that
was the greatest place, you know, sitting in this cool kitchen and learning from real professional cooks. It made an impression on me.
I taught a couple of kids cooking classes.
Oh, maybe
there,
I learned
so
from
maybe
you.
I was doing cookies and things like that.
I apologize that I don't remember who the doing a chocolate souffle kids
class? It could have been Nancy Sellers also. So
you very, very well could have been. I remember her very well from there.
Because I learned to cook from her, and Emily and Dottie and Carol,
Dottie Hopkins,
all of them.
Sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yes, that I think kind of stumbling into that place, mm-hmm. riding my bike around looking for a job one day, and I don't know why they hired me, but they did, and it changed my life.
Well, you were the Betty
Crockers. Well,
okay, never mind. Changed your life. That's. I'm sorry, I stepped on that momentous statement.
It's okay.
With goofiness. So that changed your life, getting involved with them.
You know, it's where I got into that kitchen, started cooking, you know, just making, you know, washing lettuce, things like that. But I felt, you know, it was kind of like that church kitchen. It's like, oh, I feel really at home here. I feel like I can do this. It came naturally to me. Okay. And I realized it was that now cooking had kind of, I feel like cooking kind of grabbed me.
Yeah.
You know, it just was like, here you, this is what you're going to do.
It was always in there, and it just took that step, and then you were off to the races.
Yeah.
Looking at the clock, we could go another couple minutes, I think. You know what? Let's take a pause here.
Okay.
I think this is a good place to take a pause, because you've just been, as you said, grabbed. We're going to leave the audience with a little cliffhanger to find out what happens next, and then we'll have a little extra time after the break.
Great.
Sarah Scott is our guest, Chef Sarah Scott.
We'll be back with more of Judd's Napa Valley Show right after these messages.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
So I'm having this debate with a landlord.
I said, no pets. Can't rent you the apartment.
My dog is not a pet. Look, I'm legally blind. I need my guide dog.
Sorry, those are the rules.
Rules that allow for housing discrimination? So I made a call. Turns out, landlords must make reasonable accommodations for assistance animals.
If you think you've been discriminated against, call your local Fair Housing Center.
Fair Housing is your right. Use it.
Call Fair Housing Napa Valley at 707-224-9720.
Safeway Open, presented by Chevron, returns to Napa at the Silverado Resort and Spa October 3rd through the 7th. World Golf Hall of Famer Phil Mickelson and two-time defending champion Brendan Steele headline the field at the PGA Tour's season opener. When the golf ends, the music begins. The Safeway Open Concert Series kicks off on Thursday night with Sammy Hagar. Friday night features Young the Giant, and Saturday night, don't miss Billy Idol live from the Chevron stage. Daily tickets start at just $30 and include access to golf and concerts. New this year, 100% of ticket sales support fire relief right here in the Napa Valley. For tickets and information, visit SafewayOpen.com.
If you run your own business, when you're not on the job, you're on the road, in your van. Signs that say detour and do not enter are just plain bad for business. Well, here's a sign that's great for business. It says 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance on Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or Metris vans. With pioneering safety technologies and low total cost of ownership, Mercedes-Benz vans are the right choice for your business. Check out the full lineup of Mercedes-Benz vans starting at just $25,995. 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance. That's van power for all. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
Starting at price refers to base model Metris worker cargo van. Excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Please see your dealer or go to mvvans.com for further details and exclusions.
Contact Steve and the commercial vans team at Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield. 707-430-0273.
What do you hear? Most people just hear an engine. We hear a 6.2-liter Hemi V8 with a supercharger that accelerates so fast, it'll suck the air out of your lungs and knock you back in your seat like you're an astronaut in a rocket ship hurtling through the stratosphere. But then again, we're not most people. We're the Brotherhood of Muscle. Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Everyone's a Finkel friend on Judd's Napa Valley Show.
Todd's Napa Valley Show. Todd's Napa Valley Show. Todd's Napa Valley Show. Todd's Napa Valley Show. You're listening to Todd's Napa Valley Show.
At 1440 on your AM dial in Napa and Vacaville, and streaming live in Australia at KVON.com, back to Judd's Napa Valley Show.
G'day, mate. Australia, huh?
Yeah.
I'd like to go there. I've never been.
I just love the kangaroos there.
Hey, who doesn't? All right, we'll find a time. We'll go visit some kangaroos. Lauren Mole, thank you very much for being here. And yes, anywhere that the internet is free and accessible, you can find Judd's Napa Valley Show at KVON.com, streaming live while we're on the air, but also via the iTunes store. All past episodes are posted there, and you can subscribe and pick them up. Tons of fun to be had. We are talking with Chef Sarah Scott today. Very exciting. We're finding out a little bit about who you are. Your name is known in the culinary world. You loom large, and now we're getting a little bit of your background. And you've got a little, I'm very curious, it's a, looks like a small, maybe 5x7 or 4x6 frame. It's face down, so I don't know what's on the other side of this frame, but you've got a big smile on your face. That looks like a very disheveled Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yes, it is, Judd.
Tell me about this picture.
I'm not even sure where I got this.
Okay.
But it's a treasure.
I've no doubt.
And it's a little painting or drawing of, yes, Napoleon. He looks exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been very busy, apparently. And he's sitting in a chair with his arm draped over the back of it, kind of looking down a little bit.
Things are not going well. This might be the first captured image of him from his time in St. Helena.
I think so.
Yeah. The island where he was exiled. In
the
Atlantic.
Yes, yes.
Not our my beloved hometown, St. Helena here in Napa Valley. But we do have that connection.
Exactly. Well, he's just looking a little weary.
Okay. And you don't know the...
You know,
you don't know the history of this particular.
I haven't Googled this. I don't know.
But where you got possession of this? You don't recall the story?
I think it was given to me by a French person.
Okay. Well, then
who was sharing?
It might be an original in that case.
It could be. It could be a very small little thing, but it's in a nice little wooden frame.
Yeah.
And
with a wire in the back, it's ready to hang.
Yeah, it's ready to hang. Mm-hmm. And for a your Francophile or
sure.
Your Bonapartophile, it's a really, it's a little sweet.
If you would like to pick a Bonaparte, you may have this by being the first person to tweet, get on Twitter and tweet with the hashtag JNVS for Judd's Napa Valley Show. And please put at Judd's Hill as one word, Judd's Hill. And that'll pop up for me immediately. I will take this back to the tasting room at Judd's Hill at the south end of Silverado Trail, where it will be until Friday. If no one picks it up by Friday, I'm driving this straight to the Napa Valley Museum and donating it to their collection, where I will be lauded as a patron of the arts and a grand benefactor. So thank you very much, Sarah
Scott.
You're
welcome, Judd. I know it needs to go to a deserving, appreciative home.
I think so. If you're into world history, this is a must for you. Okay, where we left off in our conversation before the break, we learned a little bit about your background, how your time at Cuisine Renaissance here in Napa really got you on the path as a professional chef.
Yes.
And from there.
Oh my gosh, from there it just exploded.
Yeah, no, it seems like.
Well, I have to tell you that Cuisine Renaissance at that time in the early 70s, all the vintners were coming. It was a place where people were meeting. It was a place that hadn't existed before. Mm-hmm. So it was a real gathering place. And when it closed a few years later, you know, everyone who was there kind of spread out into the community and kind of went on to do great things. People who had worked there.
Yeah, it's like a dandelion spreading its little seeds floating out into the community and sprouting elsewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it was kind of a seed at that time, because it seems like you know, around that time, other restaurants were opening. Cindy Paulson came.
Yeah.
And, you know, that group got going. And a lot of people arrived around that time. And so that's when the food scene started taking off. Also, the wineries were, you know, they were growing. They were getting known, you know, in different ways. And it was also the beginning. So this has always been my path. I've always cooked for wineries. I've never really been a restaurant chef. So it was the time when the wineries were looking at wine and food and the relationship between, you know, wine at the table, getting people to appreciate. I mean, as you know, at that time, wine wasn't the beverage of choice for a lot of people in this country. So it was kind of the beginning of that revolution to bring wine to the table, and the best way was through food, is what, you know, people were discovering.
I talk about that all the time. As I enjoy drinking wine, I very rarely do it without some food present as well. So you did some catering. You started your own catering company. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, when I left Cuisine Renaissance, then I went on to start. I worked for a moment at the St. George restaurant.
Oh, sure. Up in St. Helena.
Exactly, which is Trevina now Charter Oak.
And now it's, Charter Oak.
Yes, but that was a crazy place and wonderful. But I also learned the restaurant world is not for me.
No.
So I went on to start my catering company. And that was really... that was the beginning for me. Mm-hmm. I realized this was my strength, was doing catering. I started working. My first client was Trefethen Winery, and always with a focus on wine and food. You know, from there, it just branched out. I got referrals. I got to meet people at Trefethen. This was, you know, you talk about my education and my Betty Crocker, which I'm very proud of. But I have such a weird, eclectic kind of way that I learned to cook. A lot from books, a lot from reading. But also I've gotten to be involved in several cooking schools that were in this valley. And one of them was at Trefethen Vineyards for over 30 years, the Napa Valley Cooking School. And started by Bell Rhodes and Molly Chapelet and Mrs. Trefethen. And they were bringing in people like Wolfgang Puck, Jeremiah Tower, Charlie Trotter, all these incredible chefs. So I was the sous chef for that. I got to work with all these chefs and learn. And also all the kind of ladies of the Napa Valley came to these classes. Uh-huh. And it was just this incredible... what do I want to say? I don't know. It was just a gathering of the best in wine and food. So I was able to be a part of that, and I felt very grateful. And it just helped me meet people and expand my cooking, get the experience of working with everyone, and just kind of growing in that way.
What a wonderful experience. You just mentioned some amazing chefs that you worked with, and I've also read you've worked alongside Thomas Keller, Alice Waters, Julia Child, and I can think what a thrill that must have been for them to get to cook with you.
Oh, well, thank you, Jed.
That's great.
I hope they feel that way.
And look at them now.
Look at them.
Yeah. Julia Child, that must have been something.
It was wonderful. I got to meet and work with her several times, and that was through Robert Mondavi Winery during the Great Chefs Cooking School.
And you were,
take your time, Judd.
Thank you. I briefly previously mentioned you were the executive chef at Robert Mondavi Winery for many years.
Yes, for about 14 years there.
From the early 90s.
Till about 12 years ago.
Well, that's a pretty prestigious gig.
It was the best.
Okay,
so it was the best.
So it was there that you... Let's talk about Julia quickly.
Julia,
I focus on you, but we got to hear about Julia.
No. She was amazing and tall. I always felt like, I came up to about her waistline. very funny, very irreverent.
Uh-huh.
Just such... at ease in the kitchen, you
know? So the way she comes across in her shows and her books really is how she was, huh?
Yeah, she was amazing. I mean, just the way watching her, you know, handle food and talk about food, it was just an extension of her. And her husband, Paul, was always there with her. Just an amazing couple, you know, he was just right there with her. But I loved her laugh and I loved her sense of humor, and it was great.
Was there something you took away from your experience, either a technique, an idea, an angle, a perspective?
Well, I think it was like a perspective or a philosophy, mm-hmm. that, you know, to kind of relax around food. I mean, this is what I find when I'm teaching people. There's a lot of tension, like, I've got to do this right, you know. And I feel like Julia Child kind of emanated this sense of, you know, relax. It's, you know, if you drop the chicken on the floor, pick it up.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Hey, now.
Just pick it up.
Exactly, you know. And
people like to be fed. They're going to be appreciative. You don't have to tell them it fell on the floor.
No, but, of course not. That's the other rule of the kitchen.
Yeah, we shouldn't be knowing these things.
What happens in the kitchen stays there.
Until, you know, our dearly departed Mr. Chef Anthony Bourdain writes Kitchen Confidential,
exactly.
And you find out what happens in the kitchen.
Yes, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
He didn't leave it in the kitchen.
No.
But you know what? I think that got people's, it intrigued them even more.
Yes.
In it. Anyhow, I think that was all good. What a wonderful experience to be able to meet these people, get these. I would imagine there was some back and forth. I mean, you were not just, I would say, cooking for them with them, but kind of some trading around, I would hope, some cooperation, some.
Well, I think there was always appreciation.
Okay.
You know, it's you know, the opportunity to work with someone like that and engage with them and get to know them. You know, I remember Marcella Hazan had me, stirring the risotto.
Oh, yeah.
And she was a tough cookie, you know. And so she had me stirring and asking me, okay, is it time to add more broth? I was just terrified. I don't know, you know, but I can't say this. So I'm stirring along.
Oh, you weren't asking.
No. And I was stirring it for her.
I see.
In the class. She's like, okay, Sarah, you tell me when.
Oh, and, a little testing you a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Ah. And so, but I learned something in that moment, you know, because I was going to add it, and there was still some broth. You could, you know, when you're making risotto, mm-hmm. how it evaporates and you're stirring. So there was still a little liquid in there, and I said, now, she goes, no, it needs to be dry. You know, you need to, you know, pull the spoon through, and the rice stays before you add the next round of liquid. And you can feel it. There's a weight. Mm. There's a weight to the rice. So it's like, okay, you know, I got it.
That's a good tip for us too, Lauren, us home cooks.
Exactly. You know, so it's always, this is how I learned to cook, like little things like that. But also I'd watch Julia Child clean a salmon. And then I'd watch Daniel Boulud clean a salmon, maybe in the completely different way. And it's like, oh, there's a million ways to do this. There's not one way to do this.
Right.
So I guess, you know, like I said about Julia, it was like, relax, you know, you might screw it up, but you can fix it. You can go in a different direction.
Pivot.
Yes.
Well, that's great. And, you know, something I read, it was a quote of yours, I think it was in, what's it called, Edible Marin, Wine Country Marin Magazine. And you said something that I think about often, which is, I think it's a great takeaway for anybody, a chef or just anybody. Don't mess with things that are really good.
Yeah.
That was a quote.
Yeah.
I apply that to just about anything. But in the food world, you know, people like to fancy things up.
Yeah.
And certain just like lobster, for instance. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, for me, if I'm going to eat a lobster, just give me the lobster, maybe a little melted butter. I don't even need that.
Yeah.
Just, it's so good. You don't need to mess it up with sauce, Thermidor, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't complain about that, but sometimes the simplest things don't need anything else.
It's true. And I feel like I've gotten simpler in my cooking. I mean, what I aim for is like, okay, how do I take that lobster and cook it to that place where it is going to be so delicious you don't need butter or lemon? You know, it's kind of about the way that you're cooking something that allows it to taste its best.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting with a good thing. But I have certainly pared down and gotten, I think, simpler through the years with cooking. You know, it's more about, you know, that thing on the plate or that tomato, you know, let me get a really good tomato. And maybe I'm just going to put a little sea salt on it and some really good olive oil.
Yeah.
Or fresh basil, something.
That's the essence of it. And I certainly, I'm sure you have been in way too many spots that just over fancify just to impress and charge you a few extra bucks, but the I think the overall experience suffers. Another quote of yours, I think maybe it was in the same article I read, in that perhaps not, that part's irrelevant, but you said something. The question was, what is your favorite I think southern cooking ingredient that you couldn't live without? And do you recall your answer?
I'm sure it's mayonnaise.
That was the answer. Let's talk about mayonnaise for a moment.
The food group. Mayonnaise is a food group.
Okay. So, you know, it's a fine balance when you're on the radio. You don't, you know, you want to put yourself out there a little, but you also want to reserve a little of yourself for your private life. But I'm going to go out and reveal a little more than I might normally be comfortable revealing out in public. I do not like mayonnaise.
It is
the M word. I call it the M word. Now I'll qualify that. That's a very general statement. I can take a little bit in a, you know, like a deviled egg or a little bit in a potato salad or
something.
But spread it on a sandwich and I'm running gagging to the next county. So tell me about your relationship with mayonnaise.
Oh my God.
This is therapy for me. This might help me get through it.
I'm glad you can say this. And
yeah, this is therapy, so I'll pay you after this. This is going to help me. Let's talk about mayonnaise for a minute.
No, mayonnaise is the, oh my gosh, it's the South, you know? It's everywhere. And you're not alone. There's definitely people. I know people who do not like mayonnaise.
I haven't, you know, sought out any support groups, but I know we're out there.
Mayo non or something.
Mayo non. I like that. Mayonnaise.
Mayo non.
No. Nay. Say nay. So where do you incorporate it, or is it just across the board?
Oh my gosh. It is the secret ingredient.
Is it?
Maybe I can't even say where I put it sometimes.
Yeah, I might not want to know. I might not eat your cooking anymore.
No, I know. But I tell you, in the South, my grandmother was a really good cook. I didn't know her very well, but I feel like I kind of channel her. And she made everything from scratch, and she had a little mayonnaise maker, which is a tall cylindrical glass jar with this metal whip in it.
Oh.
And you just put everything in it and just move it up and down. And
oil and
you make,
eggs. And
yeah, salt, maybe lemon juice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the South, I mean, it goes into a bechamel sauce for, you know, chicken divan, or for that green bean casserole we all love.
I'm gonna step away from the mic for a moment because I'm gonna start.
I don't want to make.
I'm gonna start uttering noises. I have no control over. But go ahead.
And my sister-in-law makes mayonnaise biscuits. It goes into cake. It goes everywhere. Pimento cheese.
All right, let's stop here. I'm sorry, folks, but it's better that I not know, actually. I thought this would be helpful. It's being quite the opposite. Something I can relate is to you with, about, I wish I could speak English, is that you enjoy a belt of bourbon. That I could, I might not be able to eat mayo with you, but we could sit and have some bourbon. You're a good Southern
lady.
You enjoy a little.
I like that. I love wine.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to drink something else, it's bourbon.
How do you take it? Neat? Do you like it mixed with something?
I just like a big ice cube in it.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. And I think bourbon is delicious with food. I think it goes with everything.
I was about to ask for a pairing, but
yeah,
okay, everything.
I know. I can't give you one pairing because I feel like it goes with everything.
All right, let's talk about this beautiful book, The Wild Table, which I happen to have right here. because I want you to autograph it for me. I brought it in from home. Oh. I own this copy. But it's a really cool concept. This is about foraging throughout the seasons and what you can find out in the wild. Now, you don't have to forage. In fact, I'll admit I have actually never gone foraging, but I have cooked some recipes.
Yeah.
But I've found the ingredients in a store, farmer's market, whatnot. But tell me about the inspiration for this.
So The Wild Table, I co-authored with Connie Green, who is a master forager and has a thriving business here in the Napa Valley called Wine Forest Wild Foods. And Connie's been doing this for many years. So we got together to do this book. And it came out in 2010, so it's been out a little bit, but it also came out at the beginning of this interest in foraging, because now you see these ingredients and these books and articles everywhere. But it's a wonderful book in that Connie wrote about the ingredients. So each of them, there's a lot of mushrooms in there. Yeah. There's also berries and greens and things. Like right now, if you're driving around, you'll see the elderflowers that are blossoming.
Oh, you'll have to point one out. Yeah, I'm not sure I know what one looks like. I've had it in things, but...
Okay, so yeah, I was thinking before I came in about what's happening right now with the wild foods. And the fennel, the wild fennel that's growing on the side of the road, those yellow flowers will become, they will get to the point where you can get the fennel pollen off of those. So anyway, I learned a lot also working on this book. I developed the recipes for it and went on several of these foraging trips with Connie. And it's a wonderful book in that you learn about the ingredients, you learn how to store them, take care of them, clean them. And the recipes are meant to, showcase the ingredients, but also give you substitutions, like maybe you've used.
Exactly.
Yeah. But also, these ingredients are showing up in the markets, farmers markets, Whole Foods, places like that are selling wild mushrooms, and sometimes you'll see the fiddlehead ferns.
That's what scares me about foraging. I don't trust myself to go looking for mushrooms. Berries, no problem. I'll go on a walk and I'll see blackberry bushes. I'll eat those, no problem.
But yeah.
Mushrooms scare
me. No, mushrooms, it's a serious business. So yeah. you really need to know or go with a reputable certified mushroom expert.
Makes
and even
sense.
Then, they're constantly checking each other and
right.
Yeah.
The book is called The Wild Table, Seasonal Foraged Food and Recipes by Connie Green and Sarah Scott, and available wherever books are sold, I'm sure. Right here in Napa, Copperfields,
yes.
The Book Mine. If it's not
Fatted
on the
calf.
Shelf, ask for it.
Yeah.
Fatted Calf.
Fatted Calf sells them. Amazon has some. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like to keep things local when possible.
Thank you.
I want to ask you something we haven't touched on yet. And I don't know if anybody's ever asked you this question, but I hope that you will be honest and open. If you don't feel like answering, you don't have to. But I know that I would like to know. I know I speak for Lauren. This is a subject near and dear to both of us and to many of our listeners. Chef Sarah Scott, do you go nuts for donuts? Because we've got a box of donuts right here from our friends at Buttercream Bakery.
Oh, my God.
And if you wouldn't mind, you haven't answered the question, but that's okay.
You're talking to someone who grew up with Krispy Kreme.
There you go. Well, we can talk about comparing donuts, but I would like you to
goodness.
A look. And you just mentioned how bourbon, in your opinion, goes with everything. Do you have a particular brand of bourbon you like?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
You don't have, if you don't want to.
And this is terrible. It's like, I like the one that's in the round bottle with the little horse on top.
Blanton's.
Is that what it is?
I think so, isn't it? Or is that?
I know.
Or it sounds like that. Is it Blanton's or Valentine? I think that might be Blanton's.
I'm humiliated right
Someone
now.
Someone will call in and let me know, but I think it starts with a B. Yeah, I know the kind. It's an orb and has a little racehorse or horse on top.
I'm totally humiliated.
If you have that in front of you, which one of those donuts are you going for?
Oh, I already know.
Yes.
This one. What?
Our listeners already know by Lauren's reaction that you have picked the maple old fashioned. We have found well into the 90th percentile of our guests choose the maple old fashioned donut. It's
how could you not?
Perennial.
It is glistening with frosting.
Yeah, buttercream.
It just looks like a sweet mouthful.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're having bourbon with an ice cube.
With this, yeah.
And a maple. I think that'd be delicious.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, think
bourbon
about,
and maple go together.
I was just going to say, those are perfectly complementary.
Yeah. Yeah. Lauren, this is normally the time in the show when I say it's time to play everyone's favorite party game, but we're running out of time, so we are going to leave that as a cliffhanger for our podcast listeners. Today's Mad Libs game will be in podcast format only. So, dear listeners who are listening right now live broadcast on KVON, look for this on the iTunes store in the next week or so. Look for the Sarah Scott episode. Listen to it again. It's been fun. You're going to enjoy it the second time around. And at the end, we will have our Mad Libs game. Chef Sarah Scott, your website is sarahscottchef.com. We can find out about the book, what you're up to. You also have Instagram and Twitter at that same handle.
Exactly, yeah.
Sarah Scott Chef, and you are a good poster. On that Instagram, you've got great photos of food and scenery and things you're experiencing. I would certainly recommend people look into that. Sarah Scott Chef, once again, is the website and also the Instagram and Twitter. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks so much for making the time. I'm glad we finally got you in here.
I know, Jed. And you too, Lauren. Thank you.
This is Lauren Mole speaking for Judd's Napa Valley Show, a Gillamar production.
If you're driving, texting, checking Facebook, or returning emails and we catch you, you will get a ticket. If you don't kill yourself first, it's not worth it.